All right, Rabbi Osai, good morning. Let's begin. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us. So today's daf is daf tes. Is daf yud. 10. So we are starting from tes amud beis 9b, and we're picking up emirat Hashem from vayiki tzika lo b'dvareha 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom, still in the midst of the story of Shimshon. We dedicate our learning this morning as a zechus for the refuah shalema of Fruma Elka Bas Fega, and hope that she has a complete and enduring refuah. So we'll say, so we're picking up now, again, 9 lines up from the bottom on Testament Beis. Just before we begin, I just again want to express my hakaras hatov to the entire shir for the sponsorship yesterday and for the beautiful and generous gift. Again, it's my zechus to Baruch Hashem spend every morning with all of you, and halavai we should be zocheh to do so for many years. So we'll say, so let's begin. So remember again, we're in the midst of the Shimshon story. So again, now at this point in time, he's with Delilah. He's with Delilah. So the pasuk says, so literally, Delilah is trying to figure out what the source of her strength is, of Shimshon's strength. Remember again, Delilah herself, just so you should understand, not exonerating her, but Delilah is threatened by the Plishtim that if she does not find out the source of Shimshon's strength, she and her family will be killed. So she needs to find out, why is this guy so strong? So what happens? So literally, she's going ahead and she's chaperoning him every single day. She's pressuring him with words. Vata'al tsehu, Rashi says, is lashon dochak umetsuka. She's making his life exceptionally difficult. So what is my vata'al tsehu? What does it mean, vata'al tsehu? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Debei Rabbi Ami, Bishas Kimar Bia Nishma Tamitachtov. To which the Gemara says, how did she make his life very difficult? That in the midst of relations, right as he was about to complete the act, she would slip out from under him. So obviously, again, at that moment when he was most aroused, that's when she slipped away from him, obviously causing him agony. So remember again, this is jumping back a little bit. Now remember, this is this conversation between the Malach, the angel, and Ishes Manoach, and Shimshon's mother, about what she's supposed to do when the child is born. So the Gemara says, so he tells her, don't drink any wine, this is even when the child's in utero. Don't drink any wine, shechar, don't eat anything tummy. So the Gemara says, my kol tummy, what does that mean, don't eat anything tummy? Besu, ad hashta dvarm tamim ka'achla. And are you trying to say that up until now she was eating impure items? Right? So at the end of the day, again, what does this mean when you have this particular instruction? What it means is he was telling her that she may not go ahead and eat things that a nazir is not permitted to eat. Meaning already now, when the child is still in utero, the mother already has to maintain a Nazirite diet. So the Gemara goes weiter. So we're jumping all around the Shimshon story. So this is after Shimshon gets into the fight with a couple of plishtim, and then what happens? He goes ahead and he's dying of thirst. So the Ribono Shel Olam makes a miracle. What's the miracle? That Shimshon finds a jawbone of a donkey, and water begins to spurt out from the tooth cavity, right? I don't know if that's the right term for it, but you know where the tooth sits. So again, if you can imagine the skeleton of the donkey, there's a cavity. Water begins to spurt out of that cavity. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bei Rabbi Ami, Hu Iva L'Davar Tameh, he desired something Tameh, L'fichach Notlu Chayav B'Davar Tameh. Therefore, at the end of the day, again, he is sustained through something that is Tameh. In other words, you're going to see these interesting conflicting rabbinic feelings on Shimshon. On one hand, again, he was this deep covered tzaddik, whose primary cover was the fact that he was looked at as an immoral individual who always just wanted Philistine women. On the other hand, it was clear that he was doing the Ratzon Hashem, and he was trying to protect, bless you, he was trying to protect Klal Yisrael. So you see this pendulum swinging back and forth about how we view him. But it's clear that the one mistake he made is that perhaps he got a little bit carried away with some of his taivas. So the idea over here is, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to save him through the jaw of a donkey, an unkosher animal? Because he desired certain unkosher things. Therefore, he's sustained through something unkosher. Matalcha ruach Hashem, the Spirit of God rested upon him. Amram Chama bar Rabbi Chanina, Chalsa nivu aso shal Yaakov avinu. The prophecy of Yaakov came true. D'chsiv, yehi don nachash alei derech. Literally, done will be a snake on the road. Remember again, Shimshon is from the Shevet of Dan. What does it mean again that it would ring out, right? The bell would ring out in the camp of Dan. It teaches us that the Shechina used to be in front of Shimshon and would ring like a bell. In other words, that Shimshon had a very close connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It says over here, like the ringing out of the bell in the camp of Dan. And it says by the Kohen Gadol, Pamon Berimon, that the Kohen had these pomegranates with bells inside of it, ultimately on his begadim, on his me'il, on the external tunic. So just like, again, that made noise, so too, again, Shimshon sensed the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam in this world, like a ringing bell. Bein Sira u'bein Eshtal. So we'll say again, these are all quotes from the Shimshon story. What does it mean between Sira and Eshtal? These are names of places. Amar Rabbi Asi, Sira the Eshtal, Shnei Harim Gidolim. These were two large mountains. Va'akran Shimshon, V'takran Zebazeh. Shimshon uprooted them, lifted them up, and literally ground them against one another. V'hu Yachal Oshias Yisrael. And Shimshon will be the one who will save the Jewish people. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Huchal, top of Yud. Literally, the oath of Avimelech became null and void. They both say, what does that mean? This is actually last week's parasha. So what happens? Avimelech, who was the king of the Plishtim, went ahead and made a treaty with Avram Avinu. What was the problem? The Plishtim, in the times of Shimshon, violated that treaty by attacking Klal Yisrael. Once the Plishtim violated the treaty, then what? Then we had the ability to go ahead and respond in kind. So again, the young man grew up speaking about Shimshon. And ultimately, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed him. So Bama Baruch Hu. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bless him with? Rabbi Yehuda Marav Sheberuch Hu Ba'amaso. So Rabbi Yehuda is the name of Rav. That Shimshon, again, was a well-endowed individual. Amaso kibnei Adam, v'zaro kinachal shotit. Now, we'll say, now what this really means is the following. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately gave Shimshon an incredible, almost unquenchable desire for sexuality. Now, obviously, that would normally seem like a deficit. But for Shimshon's purposes, whose idea was to infiltrate the Philistine community, again, through these series of marriages and relationships, ultimately, again, this was necessary for his tachlis. Vayikra Shimshon al Hashem, Vayomer Hashem Zachrini na v'chaskini na achapam, Ve'enakma nakam achas mishtei einai miplishtim. So mostly remember, this might be a little bit confusing, only because we're jumping all around the Shimshon story. So we just started from the beginning of his life, now according to the Pesukim from the end of his life. Remember, Shimshon at the end of his life is taken captive by the plishtim, is brought into their arena because they captured. Remember, this is after he tells Delilah that the source of his strength is that he's a Nazir. She cuts his hair. Plishtim come in. They're able to capture him. They gouge out his eyes. They bring him to their equivalent of the Colosseum, of the arena. And what happens? And he says, he davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for one last burst of strength. And in that burst of strength, he goes and he pushes down the columns of the arena, causes the entire arena to come in, killing thousands of people inside. So the Gemara says, Amar Shimshon at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Shimshon said before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Zechar li eshim ushtayim shana sheshafatati es Yisrael, v'lo amarti le'echa mehem ha'aver li makel mi makel l'makel. This is an amazing statement. So firstly, you understand, this is why Shimshon is a tragic figure. Although, you know, if you think about it, most leaders that we read about in Tanakh are tragic figures. Tragic because just their lives were tragic, right? The greatest example of this is Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu was a great tzaddik and had an incredible life, except the personal expense that he had for that life. He gave up his family, he gave up his children, he gave up his wife, he gave up everything. So there's a certain element of personal tragedy, but then again, greatness in life requires great accomplishments. Requires great sacrifice. So the idea over here is that Shimshon says, Ribono Shel Olam, I know I made mistakes, but don't forget about the 22 years that I judged Klal Yisrael appropriately. And look what he says. In all of those years, I never asked someone to move my staff from this corner of the room to that corner of the room. In other words, what was Shimshon saying? I never used my position of power for my own personal benefit. Not even to ask someone to move my staff, because if I asked them, of course they would, because I'm the shofet. I never utilized my position for my personal covet. In that zechus, Ribono Shel Olam, give me one last burst of strength. So what happens? So I will say again, we're skipping now. Vayelech Shimshon Vaylaki Shalosh Me'os Shualim. So let's remember again, this is another episode when Shimshon has a falling out earlier in the Shimshon story. He has a falling out with one of the Plishtim. So what happens? He gathers 300 foxes. He goes ahead and he ties them together by their tails. He puts a torch in the middle and he lets them loose in the Philistine fields, burning down the fields. So Mashna Shualim, why did he choose foxes? Let the one who backs away. Apparently, if you corner a fox, I'm not suggesting it, but if you corner a fox, right, so it backs away facing you. So let the animal that backs away facing you go ahead and punish the ones who backed out of their shvua, referring to the plishtim who backed out of the shvua, a non-aggression treaty that Avimelech made with Avraham Avinu, and the plishtim backed out of it. Therefore, let the fox exact punishment from them. Tanya, Amar Reb Shimon HaChassid, Beik Seif Avshal Shimshon, Shisha Amo Haya, Shimshon was 60 amos across. He was 60 amos broad. I want to say, obviously, you understand this is Guzma, so this is some element of hyperbolic embellishment, but you understand the point is, Shimshon was a strong, large man. So the Gemara says, Shene Amar Vayishkav Shimshon Achazi Alayla, Shimshon slept until the middle of the night. This is already when he's incarcerated at the arena. Vayakam Achazi Alayla, Vayachaz Bedalto Sharair, Ubishtea Mezuzos, Literally, he lifted up the entire doorpost, he lifted up the gateway of the city, he took it on his shoulders. And we have a tradition that says that the entrance we have Aza was no less than 60 amos. So the pasuk says that Shimshon is incarcerated in jail, or in the arena, and literally he was grinding in the jail. So what does that mean? So we'll say, so the pasha pshat is that they put him to work literally in a mill. However, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ain't techina ala lashna beira. So Rabbi Yochanan says, techina, that lashna of techina, of grinding, means lashna beira, of immorality. What does that mean? Techinu omer, titchon la'acher ishti. So again, he quotes over here the pasuk from Eov. I want to say the pasuk from Eov. Titchon la'achar ishti va'aleh yichrun acherin. So Eov is talking about over here. We'll discuss this pasuk in just a little bit. But literally, when he refers to idolatry, he uses that lashon of tochin of techino. So the gemara says techino omer. So melamed. So what does that mean? So what does it mean that Shimshon was engaged in immorality in jail? Melamed shekol echad ve'echad hevi lo es ishto lebeis asurim kedesh shetis aber heimenu. We'll say, so again, what does it teach us? That when Shimshon was in jail, the Philistine men brought their wives to his cell so that they should become pregnant from Shimshon, with the hope that ultimately, again, they would have children that would be as strong and as valiant as Shimshon. Also, you should know, the Plishtim in general were known for incredibly immoral practices, and with absolutely no respect for marital bonds. So meaning adultery was rampant within Philistine culture. Already the Torah makes multiple references to this. So this notion over here, there's this strong man sitting in jail, take advantage, and they all brought their wives to him. Amra papa hani da army inshi kamei deshasi chamra kamei refuka geride duvla. Rav Papa says this is what people mean when they say if somebody likes wine, give them a glass of wine, and in front of a gardener, bring him a basket of vegetables. In other words, I will say that life has a way of putting you in situations that reflect what your priorities and things that are important to you are. So therefore, again, unfortunately, what the Gemara is saying over here is this seems to be a reflection on the fact that Shimshon placed a little bit too much emphasis on sexuality throughout his life, and therefore, again, his final days are spent in this particular state. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol mezaneh, ishto mezaneh nesalav. Whoever commits adultery, his wife will commit adultery as well. Shene emar, em nifta libi al isha, va'al pesach re'i arafti, uksiv titchon la'achar ishti va'alei yichrun achir. So we'll say, this is Eov. Remember, this is Eov speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately trying to tell the Ribono Shel Olam that he's done nothing wrong in life. And he says, if my heart was enticed for another woman, and would I show up at the doorstep of my neighbor? In other words, Eov saying, had I committed adultery, then titchon la'achar ishti, then someone else would have committed adultery with my wife. Which Rabbi say is an incredible yisod. The Ben Yehoyada comments on this, and the Ben Yehoyada says that the marital bond is all about singularity. The marital bond is all about, again, selfless dedication one to the other. Once one of those parties breaks that bond, the Gemara is suggesting that the other party feels empowered to do so as well. And this is what Chazal say when they say, if he likes large gourds, she likes small gourds. What it's apparently in the Talmud, that statement carried a lot of weight. You know, for our purposes, what that means is that they both like gourds. The idea is, whatever he's doing, chances are she's going to be doing it as well. It's an incredible yisod. This goes back to Mesilas Yesharim as well. Everything we do in life impacts the people we are. And if a person has the schus to be married, everything I do in life impacts the marriage I have as well. Shimshon judged us as appropriately and as justly as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shnei Amar, because the Pasuk says, Dan Yadin Amo Ke'echad. A little bit of a play on words. Literally, Dan will judge his nation Ke'echad, like the one. So Dan, a reference ultimately to Shimshon, will judge his people like the Ribono Sha'olam. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shimshon, Al Shmo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nikra, Shimshon, his name, ultimately comes from the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shnei Amar, Ki Shemesh U'magen HaShem Elokim. So we'll say the name Shimshon and Shemesh are really the same, the Gemara is suggesting. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu is referred to as Shemesh, as a strong, illuminating sun, and Shimshon comes from that same Lashon. Elami Atalo Yimcha. Aye, but one second, if that's the case, then you shouldn't be able to erase the word Shemesh, just like you can't erase the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Elami Eim Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, Shemesh is not an actual name of God, but rather, again, it's a derivative name of God. Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magin HaKol HaOlam Kulo, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects the entire world. Af Shimshon Magin B'doro Shel Yisrael. So too, Shimshon protects our generation as well. Va'am Rabbi Yochanan, Bilam Chiga Beragla Achas Haya. Bilam was one of his... We'll say, just if you could imagine, this Gemara is very exciting, because remember, once upon a time, Torsha Baal Peh was Baal Peh. So remember again, imagine how this Gemara unfolded. You had a bunch of great Rabbanim sitting in the base Medrash, talking about all different Agadata, and literally, they're sharing Agadic statements with each other. It must have been an incredible idea, or an incredible scene, where you literally see them all sitting together. That's why, again, if you'll notice, this doesn't have to follow a rhyme or reason, because this is a recording of an active live conversation. So Bilam, Rabbi Yochanan says, Bilam chi geber agla achas. Bilam was crippled in one of his legs. Shnei Amar, Vayelech Shefi. Shefi, the Gemara's understanding as meaning limping. He walked around limping. Shimshon chi ger b'shtei raglov. Interestingly enough, the Gemara is suggesting that Shimshon actually had some type of malady or some type of handicap in both of his legs. Shnei Amar, Shififon ale orach. Literally, he slithers along the way. Tana Rabbanon, Chamisha nivru me'in dugma shel malo. Both say there are five people that literally were created in the image of God. In other words, five people that had exquisite physical perfection. The kulon laku bahen. And they all, their downfall was in the part of them that was most beautiful. Shimshon bekocho. So Shimshon's downfall was with his strength. Let me say it differently. Shimshon's gift was his strength, but that was also his downfall. Sha'ol b'tzavaro. Tzavaro literally means neck. What this means in this context is his height. Sha'ol was handsome and tall. So his height, his beautiful looks. Avshalom b'saro. Avshalom's beauty was his hair, and that was his downfall. Tzidkia b'enav. Tzidkia was with his eyes. Asa b'raglov. And Asa was with his legs, with his feet. So let's go through each of these. Shimshon b'kocho. What does it mean, Shimshon with his strength? Dichsev. Vayaser kocho me'alav. Remember again, Shimshon was blessed with strength, but his downfall was the removal of his strength. Sha'ul b'tzavaro. Sha'ul was, again, taller than everyone else. Dichsev. Vayikach sha'ul ha'sachar v'yipol aleha. So literally, the Pasuk says, this is how Shimshon ultimately dies. Shimshon falls on his sword when he realizes that the Plishtim... Sha'ul. He falls on his sword when he realizes that the Plishtim ultimately are going to vanquish the Jewish army. So he falls on his sword. So the assumption is that he fell on his sword by his neck. So Avshalom will talk about it just a little bit. Tzidkia, bein of Tzidkia, ultimately again with his eyes. Dichsiv, ves ene Tzidkiyahu iver. Both remember again, this is Nebuchadnezzar ultimately goes out and blinds Tzidkio. Asa Baraglov, Asa was one of the Malchi Yudah, one of the kings of Malchus Yudah. Baraglov, Dichsiv, Rakla is Ziknaso, Chala es Raglov. When he got old, ultimately he had some kind of malady in his feet. So Amrabi Hudam Rav, Sha'ach Zoso, Padgara. What happened to Asa in his old age? He was stricken with Padgara. So Rabbi say Padgara, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi's pad gara shem choli hu sha'ochiz braglayim. Okay, it's some type of ailment that ultimately impacts the feet. Amar le mar zucha b'ed Rav Nachman hechi dami padarga. What does padarga feel like? Amar le kimachat b'basar achai. It feels like a pinprick. It feels like again like a pin, like a needle touching flesh. So mina yada. So how did Rav Nachman ultimately know what padgara feel like? So some say Rav Nachman actually had this. Others say he heard it from his Rebbe. Others say Rav Osai, just what? I guess what we'd call today Das Torah. Right? He knows, right? Tzadikim know certain things. They just have an understanding of the world because of their Torah that perhaps others do not. So Darsh Rava, Mipmeimane Enash Asa. Why was Asa? Most remember, Asa was also one of the Malchi Yehuda, one of the kings of Malchus Yehuda. Why was Asa punished? This is actually very interesting, because he conscripted yeshiva students. Again, this is not a political discussion, right? But it is interesting that again he conscripted yeshiva students. He took Tamidi Chachamim and he put them to work. Not necessarily the army, meaning he made them work for the kingdom. Shneemar v'hamelech Asa hishmiya es kol Yehuda. Ein Naki, that king of Asa made a proclamation ultimately for all of Yehuda. Ein Naki means no one was exempt from service. My Ein Naki, what does it mean no one is exempt from service? Amrav Yehuda Amrav, Afilu Chasan Mechedro, Vechala Mechupasa, Vechala Mechupasa. We'll say every Asa put everyone in the kingdom to work. Even the Chasan and the Kala from their Chuppah, even the Tamidi Chachamim, everyone had to work for the kingdom. Ksiv. So now we're going to get to some beautiful agarata. I mean, again, this is all beautiful agarata. We're going to get some additionally beautiful agarata. Shimshon went down to Timna. Timna is the name of a place. And then what happens? And then again, remember, we've seen Timna before. Where have we seen Timna before? By the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda goes to shear his sheep in Timna. But it's just interesting to note over here, Shimshon goes down to Timna, Yehuda went up to Timna. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Shimshon shen is kind of like sibe yirida. So Shimshon ultimately again, who in Timna suffered a yirida, spiritual decline. So for him it's called ultimately Timna. Remember again, this is where ultimately he meets more Philistine women. So it's called the yirida, Yehuda shen is alaba, but Yehuda ultimately again who has his rendezvous with Tamar and ultimately is uplifted through this event, through this encounter. It says Aliyah. Reb Shlomo Nachmani Amar Shtei Timna Osayu Chadav Yirida Chadav Aliyah. So Reb Shlomo Nachmani gives a very simple answer. He says, listen, don't get too involved in this. There are just two different cities called Timna, right? One is on a mountain, one is in a valley. So one you go up to, one you go down to. So the Gemara says the following: V'chad Rav Papa Amar Chado Timna Havi Da Asa Mehai Gisi Rida Uda Asa Mehai Gisa Aliyah. Rav Papa says again, Kegon Vardina Ube Bari V'Shuka Dinarash. So Rav Papa says, look, it's not a big deal. It could be one Timna, but depending on where you're coming from, sometimes you're going up, sometimes you're going down. Like other cities that are situated in different topographical places, depending on where you're coming from, sometimes you're going up, sometimes you're going down. Batasha b'Pesachan. So we'll say now we're switching to the Tamar story. So what happens in the Tamar story? So remember the pasuk says that. Remember Tamar. Just the background to this. Thank you. Just the background to this ultimately is that remember Yehuda's first two sons who are married to Tamar, so Er and Onah both die. Now the reason they both died is because they wasted their zera, they wasted their seed, and because they did not want to impregnate Tamar. They didn't want to impregnate Tamar. So what happens? Yehuda has no idea why his sons died. All he thinks is that Tamar is like a black widow. So what happens? So he says, there's a third son, Shelah. He's nervous to give Shelah to her in marriage. So instead he just tells her, you know what, Shelah's young, wait a little bit. What happens? Shelah grows up and she realizes that Yehuda is not giving her to him. That was just, you understand, the incredible midos of Tamar. See, Tamar could have taken care of this whole situation. How? She could have told Yehuda, I hate to tell you this about your sons, but let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you, just so you understand why everything went down the way that it did. This is what occurred. But she did not do that, for whatever the reason, probably because of her incredible midos, as we'll see. She didn't do that. So instead, what does she do? She disguises herself as a harlot. Where does she sit? So the pasuk says she sits the Pesach Inaim, at the entranceway of eyes. Amar Rabbi Alexandri, where is that? Melamed Shaholcha v'yashvala b'pischo shel Avraham Avinu. Where does she go to sit? She goes to sit at the entranceway of the tent of Avram Avinu. Makom shekol einayim tzofos liroso. The place We're all as if. So remember, Avram Avinu is gone. Avram Avinu is long gone, but apparently, again, his tent, quite beautiful, his tent apparently remained as a place where people still gathered. So she sits in the tent of Avram Avinu. Fine. Others say, no, there's a place actually called Einayim. Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar, listen to this. Amar, shenosna Einayim l'dvarim, l'dvareha. Others say what it means is, literally, shenasna einayim, she opened his eyes to this matter. What does this mean? She gave eyes to his words. In other words, she gave answers to his words. Kisha tava, amr la shamanachris, nachris at. So what happens? When Yehuda came and propositioned Tamar, so he asked her, perhaps you're a Gentile. Amarle Gioresani. Now remember, obviously everybody's a Gentile. What he's talking about is maybe you're an idolater and he doesn't want to cohabit with an idolater. So she says, no, I'm a convert. In other words, I'm a monotheist. Shema Eshes Ishat, perhaps you're married. Amarle Panuya Ani. She said, no, I'm single. Shema Kibel Bach Avich Kidushin. Perhaps your father has accepted betrothal for you from another man. Amarle Yisoma Ani. I'm an orphan, I have no father. Shema Tameya At, perhaps you're a Nida. Amarle Tahorani. She said, I am Torah. So she answered all of the questions he had, thereby opening the door ultimately again for this encounter. Boss, again, we're skipping to Avram Avinu for just a moment. Vayita Ishel be'Be'er Sheva. The pasuk says that Avram Avinu planted an Ishel in Be'er Sheva. Amar Ish Lakish Malamed Sha'asa Pardes V'Nata Bo Kol Minei Megadim. Boss, what does it mean he planted an Ishel? He planted an orchard with all kinds of beautiful delicacies. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya, Chad Amar Pardes, Chad Amar Pundak. Once, so the machlokis, what does Eishal mean? Some say it was an orchard, others say it was a pundak, an inn. Bishlam the mandamar paradis hanadich se vayita. So I understand, according to one who says that it was an orchard, I understand, because the pasuk is vayita. He planted, which is a good lashon by an orchard. El mandamar pundak, my vayita. But if you say it was an inn, what does it mean he planted? Because also you have this lashon again of vayita of planting tents, which means you put down a structure. So we'll say, so what does it mean? What did Avram Avinu do at the Eishel? What did he do either at this inn or at this orchard? He called out in the name of God, the Lord of the universe. Amar Eish Lakish, Al Tikri Vayikra. Don't read it as Avram called out. Ella Vayakri. Avram Avinu caused God's name to be called out. What does that mean? So beautiful. Melamed Shikri Avram Avinu L'Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bepekol Over Veshav. Avram Avinu caused that the name of God should be called out by all of his visitors. How so? Ketzad Li'achar She'achlu V'Shasu V'Amdu L'Baruch Hu. So when after Avram Avinu has guests, whether we will say it's an orchard or whether it's an inn, he has guests, they eat their fill, they get up and they're ready to go ahead and bless Avram Avinu for his incredible hospitality. Amar Lahem, so this is how beautiful this is. V'chi mishali achaltem? Do you think you ate of my food? Mishel Elokei olam achaltem? You ate from the food of God, from the Lord of the universe. Hodu v'shibchu ubarchu l'mish amar v'haya olam. Go ahead and give thanks to the one who created the world. So this is how Avram Avinu, again, so beautiful. No God talk during the meal, right? It's pretty amazing. No God talk during the meal. Enjoy, so happy to have you. But if at the end, when you want to thank someone, don't thank me. Thank the Ribono Shel Olam, because ultimately, we're all benefiting from his kindness and his goodness. We'll say back to the Yehuda story. So Vayira Yehuda Vayichshav El Zona. So Yehuda sees her. Yehuda sees Tamar. And he says, Vayir Eha, I should say. And he assumes that she is a Zona. Remember, again, he assumes that she is a harlot. He kisses up on her, for she covered her face. So says the Gemara Mishum, the kisses up on her, Chashuv El Zona. Because she covered her face, he thought she's a Zona. What does that mean? Amar Abelazar, she kisses up on her, Veis Chamel. Abel said, rather, again, when she was married to Yehuda's sons, she always covered her face as a form of tznius in the home of her father-in-law. So that literally, Rabbi said, what literally, Yehuda didn't have a clear picture as to what his daughter-in-law actually looked like. So the Amr Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amr Rabbi Yonason called Kala Shi Tsunua Beveis Chameha, any woman who is modest in her father-in-law's home, Zochin V'yotzin Mimena Malachim Menuviim, will be privileged to ultimately have offspring who are kings and prophets. Where do we get this from? Where do we learn this from? Minala and Mitamar. We learn this from Tamar, because it was like Tamar was Sanua, was modest in her father-in-law's home, and she was privileged to have offspring who were prophets and kings. So the Gemara says, Dechsiv Chazon Yishayahu ben Amotz. The pasuk says, a vision of Yishayahu ben Amotz, Melachim mi David. So we'll say, listen to this. Remember, so on one hand, the prophet is Yishayahu ben Amotz. So Amotz is the father of Yishayahu, And again, we know that he is a descendant of Tamar. And now says the Gemara Va'amar Rabbi Levi, Davrzem Misoras Biyadinu Mevaseinu, Amotz Va'amatzia Achemi. So let's remember again, Amotz and Amatzia. So Amatzia is one of the kings over Yehuda. Amotz is the father of Yeshayo. We know that Amatzia is a descendant of Tamar. How do we know that? Because Amatzia comes from Yehuda. She's a descendant of Tamar. We know also that Amotz and Amatzia were brothers, which means that if Amatzia is a descendant of Tamar, Amotz is a descendant of Tamar, which means that Yeshayo is a descendant of Tamar. Therefore, what do you see from here? That from Tamar came forth kings and prophets. The Gemara attributes that incredible offspring to the fact that she maintained a level of tzniyus even in her father-in-law's home. We'll say, obviously, the Gemara is not advocating that a woman has to cover her face. That's reflective of biblical norms. The point the Gemara is making over here is that even in a place, ultimately, where a woman is comfortable, like her in-law's home, still, again, if she preserves a mode of tznius, even in front of family, that tznius is ultimately, again, how she will have meritorious and holy children. So the Gemara goes weiter. We'll say, this is amazing. He mutseis. So remember, again, the pasuk says this is talking about where after Tamar is found to be pregnant, right? And ultimately, again, she's brought out. She's brought out to be burned. She's brought out to be executed. So what happens? So it says he mutseis. Now the Gemara points out it should say he mitutseis. Now we'll say he mutseis is a lotion of she, literally translated. You would translate that as she found, like from matzah, lashon found. If you wanted to say she was brought out, you would use the word he mitutseis. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, what's going on over here? La'achar shenimtzu simaneha ba'sama alvarichakan. But remember, one of the things that happened is before they had relations. So Yehuda said to Tamar, "I have nothing to pay you with." So he says, "I could send you a sheep later on." So she says, "Fine, give me your ring and give me your staff, give me your cloak as a surety." So what happens? So he gives it to her. When he comes back to ultimately pay her, so she's nowhere to be found. Now they find that she's pregnant. They want to execute her for immorality. She's being taken out to be executed. And what does she have prepared? She has prepared the personal effects of Yehuda, because she's going to drop a very veiled hint that the owner of these items ultimately is the father of my child. So what happens? As she's getting ready to organize these items, Samael. We'll say, now who is Samael? Samael ultimately is the guardian angel of Edom, the guardian angel of Esav. He comes along and he tries to distance those items from her. He doesn't want her to be able to bring those things out. Because remember, if Tamar dies, then what goes with her? What goes with her is the Davidic line. And ultimately what goes with her is Mashiach as well. Ba Gavriel v'kirvan. So Gavriel came along and what? Pushed the items closer to her. Hainu d'chsev lam natseach al yonas ilim rechokim l'david nichtam. This Rebbe says what the pasuk means when it says lam natseach to the conductor. Al Yonas Ilim. So Yonas Ilim literally means what? The mute dove. Amr Rabbi Yochanan Mishash in Israchaku Simaneha Naasis Kiyona Ilemes. But this is actually quite an amazing statement. In that moment where Samael the king, when Samael the guardian angel, distanced those items from Tamar, so she became like a mute dove. In other words, she thought that she was going to die. She thought she had no ability to save herself anymore. Michtam. So we'll say now that we quoted that passage, we're going to quote a little bit more. What does it mean? Michtam. She yatsa mimenu David. Shaya mach vitam. So we'll say, who came from the mute dove? Who came from Tamar the mute dove? Michtam. Michtam of David. David Melch was Michtam. What does it mean? Michtam. Michtam is a contraction. Mach, which means he was humble. Tam, he was complete. So the Gemara says, Davar Acher, another possibility is Michtam. What does Michtam mean? Shaiso makaso tama. Literally, his injury was complete. Shenolot kishum mo. In other words, David HaMelech was born circumcised. David HaMelech did not need a bris mila. Davar Acher, we'll say the Gemara has a whole list of people that were born mo, that were born circumcised, which ultimately represents a certain level of physical completion and elevation. So the Gemara goes back to Davar Acher, Michtam. So this is actually quite amazing as well. The same way that David HaMelech, what does he mean, Michtam? That he made himself small, he humbled himself. The same way he humbled himself when he was young in front of his Rebbe. So even when he got older, he humbled himself in front of his Rebbeim as well. I will say, this is an amazing thing. As a child, to humble myself before my Rebbe, so that's easy, because I'm a kid. I don't have all that much to be arrogant about. As we get older, so again, Baruch Hashem, we accomplish things. That's where, as we saw, Mishnah, that's where there's a great danger of gaiva. And of course, as we get older, there's also a greater reluctance to yield to authority. There's a greater reluctance to bend my knee before anyone. The greatness of David is that he's David, he's Melech, he's the king, he's the founder of a dynastic monarchy, he's the Zayda of the Mashiach, and yet what? Even in his old age, he was always deferential to his Rebbe. So the Gemara goes back now to the Tamar story.
So remember again, Tamar is being taken out to be executed.
And she sends a message, look, I'm not going to tell you who the father of the child is, but all I'll tell you is the following. Whoever is the owner of these items, the staff and the ring and the cloak, whoever is the owner of these items, this is the father of my child. Aye, the Gemara says, V'teima le'meimar. Why doesn't she just say, Yehuda, you are the father of this child? Amar Rav Zutra bar Tuvi, Amar Rav Amri Leh, Amar Rav Chana bar Biznav, Amar Rav Shimon, Chassid v'Amri Leh, Amar Rav Yochanan, Mishra Rav Shimon, Meyochai. What do we learn from here? Noach lo lo adam shiyapil atzmo l'soch kif shana ish, va'al yalbin p'nei chaveiro b'rabim. We'll say, what do we see from here? It is better for one to allow themselves to be cast into a fiery furnace than to embarrass their friend publicly. That Tamar makes a calculated decision. She is not going to embarrass Yehuda publicly. She is not going to name him as the father of the child. What she will do is, she will send the personal advice. She will give him the opportunity to realize what it is that has happened and give him the opportunity to own this moment. But she is not going to embarrass him. And says the Gemara, from here we learn an incredible concept. Better to give up your life than to go ahead and embarrass someone publicly. Minolan, where do we learn this from? Mitamar. We learn Satan. I'll just say very quickly, if you look at the top tosis on the daf, so look, Noach lo lo adam, so look at the last two words on the last of the wide lines, Benirahai, Delochashiv le Bahadi Gimel Aver, Shin Om de Mefei Pekuach Nefashos, Avodos Kochavim, Gilar Ashi Chustamim. So ask Tosis, I don't understand that this is true, that you have to give your life rather than what? Rather than go ahead and embarrass someone publicly, then why isn't this included in the list of the Gimel Chamuros? Well, remember again, we know that there are three Averos for which you have to sooner give your life rather than violate them, namely immorality, idolatry, and murder. So why don't we include a fourth over here and say ultimately you have to give your life rather than embarrass someone? So Tosis gives an interesting answer. Tosis says, "The Averos Halbanas Panim ainot Mifureshes B'Torah." Because when Chazal organized the list, they only organized the list of three Averos that are mentioned explicitly in the Torah, that you should sooner give your life for them rather than violate them. But Habanah is part of embarrassing someone in public, which is not written explicitly in the Torah, but rather is learned out from an episode, is not included in the list. We'll say, Rabbeinu Yonah in Maseches Brachas gives a much simpler answer. Rabbeinu Yonah says that embarrassing someone in public, he holds, is avak ritzicha. It's an offshoot of murder. So it does not need to be counted as its own. Rather, again, it falls under the umbrella, if you can imagine, of killing someone. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Yonah literally says, halacha lemaisa, that it is better to go ahead and give up one's life than embarrass someone in public. The Gemara goes weiter. Hakirna, remember again, so Tamar says to Yehuda, Hakirna, recognize, right? Recognize these items as belonging to you and kind of own this circumstance. Amar Rabbi Chaim, Rabbi Chanina, Bahakir bishar li'aviv, Bahakir bishru, let's listen to this. Yehuda informed his father with the lashon of haker, recognize, and therefore Yehuda is informed with the lashon of haker, recognize. What does that mean? Bahakir biser, haker na saksonas bincha, he. Bahakir bistru hakir na lemi. So also listen to this. So Yehuda deceived his father by telling him, Dad, hakir na, do you recognize this coat? Setting up a trap for his father to think that Yosef was killed. And it's amazing how the same lashon is used by Yehuda. That what happens again? Tamar says to Yehuda, hakir na, do you recognize these items? Are they yours? No. What does it mean? No, please. Ein no al lashon bakasha. I'm like, Tamar says, please, because she says to Yehuda, please, recognize your responsibility here, recognize that the Ribbono Shel Olam helped to orchestrate these events, and do not shield your eyes from me. Yehuda recognizes again that these are his personal effects, and what does he say? Tamar was wiser than me. Yosef Shekidi Shimshon B'Seser Zacha V'Osifu Lo Os Achas Mishmo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chsev Eidus B'Yosef Shmo. So we'll say Yosef, who sanctified the name of God, but he made a Kiddush Hashem, but he did so privately. In other words, what does this refer to? This refers to the episode of Eishes Potiphar. Eishes Potiphar, Potiphar's wife, wanted to sin with him, bless you, but he would not sin with her, and his refusal to sin ultimately sanctified the name of God. But again, all of that happened behind closed doors. No one knew about it. But yet, despite that, a letter from the name of God is added onto his name, because Yosef is also known as Yehosef. The hey representing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yehuda Shekidish Shem Shem Farhesya, but Yehuda ultimately was sanctified the name of God publicly, because remember, we'll say, can you imagine this? Everybody's gathered for the execution of Tamar. And Yehuda says in front of everyone, it's my child, right? I am responsible for this. So again, that ownership over this act was a Kiddush Hashem in public. Therefore, v'nikra kulu ashmo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ultimately, again, within Yehuda's name, we'll say, remember, again, within Yehuda, you have Yud Hey and then Vav and Hey. The entire name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to be found in the name of Yehuda. Kevan shahoda va'omer tzadkami. And once Yehuda admitted his role, and he said, she is wiser than me. The boss says, she's wiser than me, because Yehuda realized that she realized that he never had any intention of giving her to Sheila. So therefore, she took matters quite literally into her own hands. So yotisa baskal va'omra. A Basko came out and said to Yehuda, Yehuda, you saved Tamar and her two sons, because remember again, she's pregnant with twins. Mina are from the fire. In the merit that you saved three people from the fire, Tamar and the twins in utero, I will save three of your offspring from the fire. And who are those? Who are they? Maninhu, Chananya, Mishael, Va'azaria. Tzadka mimeni. So what does it mean when it says that she was wiser than me? Mina yada. Biyata sabaskal va'amra mimenu yatsu kivushim. Because what said the baskal comes out and says that what? That ultimately these events happen because the Ribbono Shel Olam says that the events and the way they occurred has my shtempel. That ultimately, again, I helped to orchestrate these events, this rendezvous. V'lo Yosef od l'daita. So now after she's saved, so now the interesting thing, the Pasuk says, V'lo Yosef od l'daita, which sounds like the Pasuk is saying that Yehuda no longer lived with Tamar, that they did not maintain an ongoing conjugal relationship. But the Yimar says, Amar Shmuel Sabach Hamua, Derav Shmuel Ba'ami, Mishmei Derav Shmuel Ba'ami, Kevan Shiyada Shuv Lo Pasuk. No, the Yimar suggests the opposite. Once now she was pregnant from him, ultimately, again, they had a married life together. Ksiv hacha v'lo Yosef od l'daita, uksiv hasav kol gadol v'lo Yosef. Rabbi says, interesting enough, sometimes the word lo Yosef could mean no longer continues, and sometimes the word lo Yosef means it did not stop, it did not cease. So to over here again, after this episode, so Yehuda and Tamar were married, and ultimately, again, lived together as husband and wife. Let's say it's just called a little bit weiter. Avshalom niskav b'saro. So Avshalom ultimately, again, remember, became arrogant because of his hair. Tan Rabbanon, Avshalom b'sa'aro marad. Avshalom rebelled through his hair. Shenemar, uke Avshalom lahaya ish yafeh, ubegilcho es rosho v'haya miketz yomim liyomim, asher yigalach ki kavir alav v'gilcho, v'shakal es se'ar rosho, masayim shkolim be'evan amel. So we'll say, remember, Avshalom was a Nazir Olam. So I remember again from our Nazir days, how often does a Nazir Olam cut his hair? Once a year. Once a year, he has the ability to go ahead and thin out his hair. When he would thin out his hair, it was a ridiculous weight. And literally, again, it was like 200 shkalim, the weight of 200 shkalim, be'evan ha-melech. So Tana, Evan Sha'anshei Tiveri of Anshei Tzipori Shoklim Ba. This referred to the measuring stone that the people of Tiveri, the people of Tzipori, literally the weight of Avshalom's hair was 200 times more the size, the weight of that stone. Lefichach Nitla Bisaro. Therefore, again, Avshalom, his hair was the source of Avshalom's arrogance. Because it was the source of his arrogance, source of his beauty, therefore, Nitla Bisaro. Shene Emar, Vayikra Avshalom Lefne Avde David, Vavshalom Rochev Ala Perit, Vayavo. So what happens when Avshalom is on the run? What happens? He's running away from David's soldiers. His hair literally gets stuck in the branches. He gets stuck in the branches. Can you imagine this? He's suspended. The donkey keeps going, right? It sounds like a cartoon, right? The donkey keeps going, and literally he's dangling from his hair. So listen to this, this will stop. So the obvious question is, why doesn't Avshalom try to cut himself down from the tree? So Tanan Debe Rabbi Shmuel Ba'osa Shah,
Nifka Sha'ol mitachtav. In that moment, ultimately, again, when Avshalom is dangling from the tree, then what? Literally, he sees the pit of Gehenna opening up from under him. And therefore, again, he's too nervous to cut his hair, because, again, if he cuts his hair and falls off, he falls ultimately into the Sha'ol. Rabbi said, the idea ultimately being what? The idea ultimately being that what the point the Gemara is expressing over here is the Yisod that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each of us gifts, gives each of us incredible qualities and incredible kochos. And it's so easy to become a balgaivet, easy to become arrogant because of those kochos. It's our job to always remember that those kochos are used to better the world around us, to better those around us, and to better ourselves. But the moment those kochos become a source of arrogance are the moment that those very kochos become the beginning, chas v'shalom, of our downfall. We'll stop over here, and we'll continue here tomorrow.